Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds, Chris Broussard's got his game face on with us on this Wednesday morning. Before we get to some basketball, here's what we got on the lineup. Is the MVP Lamar's to lose this season? A really interesting take on why the Eagles will win the division and why Tom and Giselle are absolutely, positively adorable. Nick wanted to make sure we got that story in the show, and we did, buddy, so you're all set. But we're going to start in the NBA this morning. So yesterday, guys, remember we talked about a new NBA playoff format. Teams seeded 1 through 16 with no conferences. So Nick spent yesterday putting pen to paper, picking out the outcome of every 7-game series until he crowned a championship. But Kevin Wilds, you've been working with our guy Nick long enough to predict his predictions to stay one step ahead of him, albeit a small step. How do you think, looking at this board, Nick has this foursome playing out? Let's start on the top left. How do you think he'll go here?
All right. The prognosticator of prognosticators, Nick Wright. I think Orlando is basically playing a home game here. Everything is in Orlando. I think you give Orlando one game. So you've got Bucks in 5. And then Chris Paul sneaks past the Heat in maybe 5. He ends up going to the Knicks after that. And then I think it's another Bucks in 5. That would be my prediction about your prediction, Nick.
All right, so you were very close. I have Milwaukee sweeping the Magic. I don't think the home games are going to matter for the Magic. They are totally overmatched, and we can show what we've got here. I've got Milwaukee sweeping the Magic. I have OKC beating the Miami Heat in 6, actually. So you're right on those predictions that I have, and we can reveal it. There it is. And Milwaukee then winning in 5. I think it's going to be very tough for anyone to give any real resistance to Milwaukee, particularly early in the playoffs, no matter the format. No one's going to, Broussard, take any issue with Milwaukee advancing past Orlando and whomever they play in the second round. I do think Heat Thunder could be one of the most intriguing first round series. Broussard, do you have any issues, any qualms, any critiques with if we do get the 1 through 16 format, this quadrant going like that?
Obviously, Milwaukee gets past Orlando in quick fashion, but I thought about going with the Thunder. I thought hard about it. They've played some of the best basketball in the league over the last 3 months. They've been 29-10. However, the Heat are tough. They shoot the 3 well. You talk about home games. I mean, they're in their home state, you know, so it's somewhat, you know, of a home game for them, I guess. I understand it may not matter, but I've got the Heat winning over Oklahoma City in a tough 7-game series. And that makes it tough for Milwaukee because we know Miami is 2-0 against the Bucks. Bam Adebayo, you know, likes going against Giannis. Jimmy Butler is gritty and hard-nosed. And both teams shoot the 3 well, but I will give the Bucks the edge. I think they'll get past Miami in a tough 6 games.
So here's my response to the Miami OKC, your point, because it's well taken, is this. Where Oklahoma City has been exceptional this year, Broussard, is close late. They have been the best fourth quarter and clutch team in the league. They're more of a veteran team than Miami is, so I think they might be a little more prepared to deal with this layoff. And we know playoff games, particularly between two closely matched teams, they're always going to come down to the last 4 or 5 minutes. I just trust Broussard, Chris Paul in those situations more than anybody Miami has.
Yeah, I like Butler late. We saw it last year with Philadelphia, and he's hungry. And look, he's finally in a situation where he has his own team, and the guys are accepting it, at least for right now. Chris Paul obviously he's had mixed, you know, responses in the clutch. Sometimes he's been great, sometimes he's struggled. I also think with Chris at his age and his history, injuries could be, you know, a hammy here or there. I'm not so sure he won't be felled by an injury when we start playing.
Jeez.
All right, Jenna, if we move on to the next quadrant, but before you set it up, it just should be noted, the next one, and I'll let you take it, Jenna, we would get these matchups either way, whether the regular format or the other format, it would be these 4 teams playing each other, but go ahead, Jenna.
All right, no, Wilds, let's do it. Next quadrant, bottom left. How do you think Nick filled out this portion?
So I think the clips roll, Nick. I know you don't like Kawhi too much, and you're saying, no, it's not that I don't like him, but you don't like him. But I think clips roll, the Mavs, and look, I grew up in New England, but I think the Sixers win this, and I think you've got the Sixers winning this. They're 3-1 against Boston. They're 29-2 at home. They're terrible on the road. So I think the big question is, does Orlando play like the home court, or does it play like an away court? If I'm the Sixers, I'm flying down Meek Mill and Tasty Cakes and Yingling to make that thing feel as Philly as possible. And then I think it'd be super interesting if the Sixers could get past the Clippers. I don't know. I think you probably have the Clippers, but I personally love the Sixers here, Nick.
All right, you almost went 0-3 there, Wilds. I think Clippers-Mavs is a brutal seven-game series. You got the number one offense in basketball. I think the Mavs can give them all they can handle. I like the Celtics over the Sixers. And Broussard, okay. This is the one I'm sure we'll go to war on. The Celtics know who they are. They know what their rotation is. They know exactly what they're trying to do. The Clippers, meanwhile, we don't know their rotation. They don't know their rotation. Reggie Jackson, Marcus Morris, how are we fitting you in? I think the Clippers are going to be in for all they can handle in round one against the number one offense in basketball. And I think the Celtics under this format would beat them in round two.
I will give you that Dallas is a tough first round matchup for anybody. Obviously, you got Luka, but it's his first playoff, and you know he's young. So Clippers will get past them. This is a tough one in Boston and Philly, but I think coaching is a big factor here too. And I give Brad Stevens the big edge there. So you're right, it'll be Clippers, Celtics. I know this was tough for you, Nick, because you're not really a fan of either team. You like to underestimate both teams, but you are so off on the Clippers. I'm going to save some of that because they're going to be alive a lot longer than you think. So I got the Clippers beating Boston in this one, although that's a heck of a second-round matchup.
You know, it's so interesting. You've been saying all year long, before the year, during the year, how off I've been on the Clippers, despite the fact that the 65 games that have been played have showed I was the only one in America right about the Clippers. A week before the damn shutdown, they were the 4 seed in the West. So we'll see. No matter what the playoff format is, we'll get to see if the Clippers are the team that you have espoused them to be the favorites in the West and all of this, or if my preseason pessimism about them was correct. But, Jenna, I'll let you keep us moving on this.
I'm with you, Nick. I like the Celtics. All right, let's move on to the other side. Top right now, Knicks Lakers, Knicks Rockets. Wilds, what do you think Nick has in this quadrant?
I mean, this is the 215 here, Nick, is just up for grabs. I know you've probably got the Lakers in maybe 6, but if KD comes back, and I know there's no positive reports about KD, at the same time, he had surgery on June 12th, I think. If we're into late July, we're going to be at 400 days of recovery. Historically, we're at like 250. Boogie came back at like 350. Chauncey came back at like 360. So it's a lot of time for KD. I know everybody's different, but I'm not willing to write him off entirely. The Jazz, we don't know if they like each other. They're going to have to go to counseling before they even step on the court. Rockets take it there. And then I guess you've got Lakers in 5 over the Rockets, Nick.
You got one thing right. I got Lakers in 5. The Lakers are going to sweep the Nets.
Okay.
So I got Lakers in 4, Lakers in 5. And the Rockets, and I got the Rockets in 6 over the Jazz. Broussard, I think the Jazz, their entire chances of competing in this postseason went out the window when Bogdanovich got that surgery. Like, he's too key to what they try to do to be able to beat a quality first-round opponent in Houston. And I do think Houston can give the Lakers a bit of trouble. I was at the game in Houston where P.J. Tucker, for at least a half, did well against LeBron. The Rockets then later beat the Lakers in a game where Harden only went 3-for-10. But that's how I see that quadrant playing out.
Look, Brooklyn, I've said in the past, Kevin Durant shouldn't even think about coming back. But Wilds is right. It will have been so long that since he had the injury, he should be ready. I wouldn't rush it. But if he's ready under this situation, if I'm Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving is healthy, I'm looking at this like, this might be a chance to sneak a championship. This short playoff format and all that. So I think he's doing that, but I still go with the Lakers either way. And then you got the Rockets. I do pick them over Jazz. You mentioned Bogdanovich. Obviously, you got the Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert situation too. I think over time that time will heal those wounds and they'll be fine. But this year, it's going to be a problem. So I got Lakers, Rockets. You're right, Nick. Small ball with the Rockets. Can it give the Lakers some problems? Yeah, maybe they get a game or two, but the Lakers advance.
All right, and real quick on Durant, it would be so unfair to ask him to come back in the cauldron of the playoffs, but Jenna, go ahead.
All right, last bracket, guys. Bottom right, Raptors, Grizzlies, Nuggets, Pacers. You see it right there. Mr. Wilds, take us through what you think Nick has.
Nick, I got to be honest with you. This is the bracket I'm least excited about. I wish there was a little more firepower in this bracket. I know I'm supposed to love the Raptors. I just don't. I think Raptors roll the Grizzlies. I think that's like in four. I think Nuggets roll the Pacers in maybe five. I don't think since there's no Denver home court, I think it's Raptors in five. That's what I think your predictions
are. Well, you got the teams right. You got the games close. Raptors in five, Nuggets in five. Then I do think Raptors-Nuggets would play a good series. I trust the championship medal of Toronto. Broussard, you love this 16, this new format. This new format, a quarter of it involves this, which I don't think has any sex appeal to anyone outside of those four markets. But that's how I see this one playing out. I assume you agree with most of that.
Yeah, I love the other three brackets. This one is pretty mundane, but I agree with you. Toronto, Denver, and then that'll be a really good series, but Toronto will edge them. So I'm with you all the way on this one.
All right, let's move on to the final four, guys. You have Bucks, Lakers, the Danny Ainges, and the Raptors, Nick. Take us through, Kevin, what you think Nick's going to do here.
I mean, I think Nick's going to go Bucks in six, Lakers in maybe five, and then it's going to be classic Nick Wright time, America. Lakers in three for the championship. LeBron wins MVP.
Too much respect for Giannis. You were close. Too much respect for Giannis. Bucks in five. They walk over the Celtics just like they did last year against the Celtics. Lakers in five. LeBron, Ghost of Christmas Past for the Raptors. It's like, again, we got to go through LeBron
there
to make the finals. And then my preseason prediction, my midseason prediction, my current prediction, Lakers over the Bucks in six. What say you, Chris Broussard?
Well, I'm not even sure Toronto's going to show up if they have to face LeBron again. So they might win that series by forfeiture. But Lakers definitely make the finals in this case. You're so wrong, though. Look, the Clippers, as much as this layoff may benefit LeBron because he's older and he gets to rest, he'll have, what, 2-3 months off to get his body right, it is going to benefit the Clippers more than anyone. Don't forget, Nick Wright, they have been banged up all year. Kawhi Leonard missed 13 games. Paul George missed 22. Those two are going to be 100% now. And even as they were just dropping those guys in the lineup here and there, they still were playing with great chemistry. They are going to be a juggernaut. They beat Milwaukee. And they, as much as I hate to say it because I am a LeBron fan, they beat the Lakers in a hard-nosed finals.
Wow.
LA, Nick. Clippers over the Lakers in six.
Nice.
Listen, I'm glad you're sticking with it and going on the record. You've been on the record every step of the way, so you'll get to have been wrong every step of the way. If this does turn out to be the final four, though, get ready for the narrative shift to be, God, I mean, yeah, LeBron made the finals, but it's out west. Look, all the best teams are in the East. LeBron, another cakewalk for LeBron to the NBA Finals, to his what would be his fourth Finals MVP, Jenna, and his
Disney
fourth championship.
World.
And he could celebrate it right there in Disney World, right where they're holding
He's
the NBA
there.
Finals this year, it would appear.
I love it. Really good stuff, guys.
A healthy lifestyle should be easy, right? Eat veggies, drink green smoothies, exercise, get your heart rate up, and do yoga to bring your heart rate back down. Well, maybe not so easy, but there is something that helps improve everything, and you can literally do it with your eyes closed. It's sleep. Sleep Number knows what it takes to sleep your best. The Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed lets you choose your ideal firmness, comfort, and support on each side, your sleep number setting. It's the perfect solution for couples. These beds are so smart, they respond to your every move and automatically adjust to keep you sleeping comfortably all night. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. And now, for a limited time during the Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number Special Edition Smart Bed, a queen, now only $17.99. You'll only find Sleep Number at Sleep Number stores or by visiting www.sleepnumber.com.
And we are back here with former All-Pro running back Brian Westbrook. We're drawing a blank. To say that the Buccaneers linebacker Shaq Barrett is slightly excited about his new quarterback is a slight understatement. He said, quote, "I think with Brady, it just makes us an automatic contender for the Super Bowl." Nick, Shaq Barrett's comments on the Bucs' Super Bowl chances are blank.
Manning-esque, and I'll explain that in just a moment. All my answers today kind of follow a theme if you follow along with them. But Manning-esque, what I mean is this. Shaq Barrett won a Super Bowl once with Peyton Manning in his final year in the league, in a year where Manning was downright awful, 9 touchdowns, 17 picks, but they were able to overcome that because of a great defense and excellent supporting cast. And if the Bucs are going to win the Super Bowl, it's going to be because they are able to overcome what could be the final year of Tom Brady's career, a clearly deteriorating player. So Shaq Barrett has firsthand experience on how to do this. And if they are going to do it, Brian Westbrook, it's going to have to be Manning-esque, the way the 2015 Broncos were able to do it.
You know, I think Barrett's comments are a bit premature. I think anytime you add the GOAT, of course, you're going to be much better having Tom Brady than Jameis Winston, who threw 30 interceptions last season. But the only problem is that you won't have, as far as Tom Brady, won't have the same advantage of playing against a weak AFC East competition. Here's the thing. When you talk about that NFC South, you have two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in Matt Ryan and Drew Brees. You have the Saints as Super Bowl contenders as well. And then when you look at the conference, you also have the 49ers, you have Seattle, you have the Packers, you have the Eagles. You have a bunch of teams that I have Super Bowl aspirations, very good football teams. To me, I think they have a good team down there in Tampa Bay, but they have to gel together and to be able to beat some of the teams in their own division and in their conference, I think that's a tall order.
Jen, I went with the man in the mirror, and I know I'm supposed to be pro Tom Brady everything, including the puns on the T-shirts, but I'm not this time. I agree with Nick that it has to be Tampa Bay's defense that gets it done. Their rushing defense, just bonkers. Yards per game first, yards per rush first. My favorite stat, stuff percentage. Rushes for negative yards and 10-yard rushes, which we need to work on the marketing of this. Dusty called it big yardage plays. They're also first in that, but you can't have stuff percentage in big yardage. So, Nick, I agree with you. It's going to be the defense for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
By the way, guys, Bucks with the fifth best odds to win the Super Bowl this year. On to reigning MVP Lamar Jackson. How do you follow up on an MVP season? On a splashy, head-turning, human highlight reel year? How about doing it again? Jay Glazer says, I don't see anyone catching up to Lamar. Nick, action Jackson's ceiling following his MVP season is blank.
Westbrook-esque, but I don't mean Brian Westbrook.
Oh, nice.
I mean Russell Westbrook, and here's what I'm talking about. Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double. First person that had done that in 40 years in the NBA, 50 years in the NBA, and he runs away with the MVP, getting 69 first-place votes. The very next year, he does the exact same thing, but because his team wasn't successful in the playoffs, he wasn't great in the playoffs, and we had just seen it, he got 0 first-place votes. So even if Lamar duplicates his on-field regular season success, I feel like the voters won't give him the credit he was given last year because we've already seen it now once, and he wasn't great in the postseason, even though neither should really work against him. So I think much like Russell Westbrook in 2018, even if he duplicates it, he won't be in the MVP conversation, Brian.
I like what you bring up. Listen, when you talk about a Westbrook, Brian Westbrook, Russell Westbrook, any other Westbrook, make sure you talk about with respect. So you have to give Russell Westbrook some respect there, Nick. I do appreciate that. But this is what I think about Lamar Jackson. I think his the ceiling is complicated. We all know the talent that Lamar Jackson is. We also understand 36 touchdown passes, over 1,200 rushing yards last year. There were times when you're watching him where you're saying he's unstoppable all by himself. But here's why it becomes complicated, because we know he's going to have a great regular season. It's a postseason that's going to determine how we look at Lamar Jackson at the end of the football year. And so if anytime you win in the NFL, that football team, the coaches and the other players are going to be saying to themselves, well, Lamar had a great game. Is this something that he can duplicate in the playoff? If it's not, then they're going to be concerned. If this is a situation where Lamar's throwing the ball down the field, he's unstoppable passing the ball because that's what he's going to have to do in the playoffs, then I think that's something that the team can build around. They can continue to be excited about. However, if it's just running, if it's not putting this team in the position with his arm, then I think it's going to be more complicated for Lamar down the stretch, because his team is going to have to believe that they're going to have to be able to win in the playoffs with his arm, not just his leg.
Imagine if you got MVP back-to-back years. You have to start pouring the iron for the statues and getting him fitted for his Canton jacket. The only guys who have ever won back-to-back MVPs are legendary Peyton Favre, Montana, and Jim Brown. If he pulls this off, you can just punch his ticket to Canton, and he's only 23 years old. It'd be amazing.
He's no Taysom Hill, but, you know, who is?
That's true, Jenna.
Reigning MVP. What? Exactly. On to the Dolphins now, rather, and the much-anticipated game plan for new quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa. Hold him back or let him go in his rookie season. A recent report says Miami is not opposed to playing Tua this year. So, Nick, Tua's playing time during his rookie season should be blank.
I'm going to do the rarely seen thing in drawing a blank, which is have my final answer be the same as my first answer, Manning-esque. But instead of talking about Manning's final year in the league, I'm going to talk about Peyton's first year in the league when he started all 16 games for the Colts. Who gives a damn they went 3-13? The next year they went 13-3 because he got that experience. He took his lumps, he threw a bunch of picks, but they put him out there because they knew he was their quarterback of the future. Assuming Tua's health checks out, and I think it will, there is no reason he should not start week one. He is a blue chip future star in this league. The earlier you get him on the field, the better. So I say, Brian Westbrook, it's Manning-esque, but we're talking about Peyton Manning's rookie year in this context.
I think his playing time during his rookie season should be unlimited, provided two things: that you can protect him and that you have the weapons around him and that he's healthy. If you have those couple things, then I think you should allow Tua to play as much as he can. Here's the thing that he's going to learn his first year. First of all, the burden of being the number 5 overall pick, the quarterback in the city that hasn't won very much at all recently. The other thing he's going to learn is that he's going to learn the speed of the game. Even though he played at a big-time college program, the speed of the NFL game is a little bit different. And lastly, it's situational football. How are teams going to attack him being a left-hand quarterback? How teams are going to attack him on third down, short yardage situations? Those are all things that you have to learn early on, because it's going to help you in your second, third, or fourth year down the line, the same way that it helped Peyton Manning early on in his career.
Jenna, I went with hair raising here because I think the big question is, what happens if Ryan Fitzpatrick is good? The last 9 games the Dolphins had, they went 5-4. They lost to the Jets by a point. So if Fitzmagic is actually good, I think Flores is in a tough spot. Like, oh, we're kind of winning these games. We've got that December 6th game. Joe Burrow is supposed to be Tua. That might turn into Joe Burrow versus Fitzpatrick if he does well and gets a haircut. I think Flores has an interesting decision to make.
He won't get a haircut. He's going to have to get fitted for a new helmet. And while he does that, if Tua is healthy, the best way to get better is by playing. Those are my 2 cents. A new World Cup format is being floated around in the NBA. This would replace the traditional first round with a 20-team group stage, similar to the way soccer does it, or in other words, one more reason for my dad to yell "Go!" at the TV every few minutes. Nick, you think this could potentially work?
Oh, it could definitely work. It would just be wildly unfair and unnecessary. I'm against them reseeding 1 through 16 because it's unnecessary, even though it would potentially help the team I'm rooting for and the team I picked, the Lakers. I'm against this because it's unnecessary and because it would be wildly unfair, in particular to the Bucks and the Lakers. The Bucks and the Lakers have both already lost out on what they've earned, home court advantage, but there's nothing you can do about that. But to now just say your regular season performance, as long as you're in the top 20, is totally meaningless, and you could be out of the whole thing after potentially two bad games, is lunacy. It's utter lunacy. If we just want to have it be as fun and as exciting and new as possible, have it be a horse competition or 3-on-3, whatever the hell you want to do, but it's not. You will lose the integrity of the postseason. So it'd be fun, but the reason they do this in the World Cup Wilds is because you have teams qualifying that were playing in different leagues, in different organizations. That's not what's going on in the NBA. I don't know why you'd need to do this.
I'll tell you what, Kevin O'Connor wrote a great article for The Ringer. This took my interesting meter like this. Blammo! I was like, ooh, this is fascinating. Here's the other interesting part. It's a little bit weird, but it happens every once in a while, or at least it's talked about in the World Cup. If taken, this is just KOC's like theoretical bracket. This is not real. This is just like there would be a drawing and probably be televised. That was, it's a whole nother interesting element of it. But if you go 7-0, and then all the other teams are splitting the games, there's a chance for your final game that you could submarine a different team by throwing that game. I don't know how they prevent that. It's a little bit of skullduggery. I think it would just be built into the format. It would certainly be interesting. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's a great article, and I was fascinated by it, Brian.
You know, Kevin, I think this is awesome. I mean, you're talking about people, fans that are coming out of quarantine right into a situation where you have a round-robin type of tournament, and you have the ability, just like Nick mentioned, that higher seeds, if they lose a couple games, then they could be out. The drama that surrounds that, to me, brings the life back to the NBA, I think would be awesome for everyone involved. The other thing that they mentioned in a couple articles that I read is that there may be a potential for a higher seed, the number one seed, to pick their opponent. Imagine the cringe-worthy type of things being associated with picking your opponent, and now that team that you pick having that chip on their shoulder, being able to say, oh, they won it somewhere else, now they get an opportunity to play us. To me, it'll be pretty cool.
All right, let's get back to some football now. The 4th-and-15 onside kick alternative has been a big talking point of late, but Mike Florio thinks it would be a mistake to allow a team that's leading to use it. Brian, you agree that only a trailing team should be allowed to do the 4th-and-15 alternative?
No. I mean, I think that if you were trailing and you wanted to do a surprise onside kick, you can absolutely do that. I think in this situation, if you want to go for it on 4th-and-15, even if you're winning, that they should be allowed. To me, that I'm always been about, if your team is better, you can go score as many points as you want. If your defense doesn't have the ability to stop a team from converting a 4th-and-15, then you probably don't deserve to win anyway, so you don't get that opportunity. To me, at the end of the day, here's the deal. You want to be able to put your best team on the field. You want to be able to go out there and try to win a football game. Whether I'm up or losing, I should have the opportunity to go for it on 4th-and-15.
Nick, I still have the scars of Mike Vrabel's clock manipulation. They're still healing. They're all down, up and down my leg. I think it's a clock problem. The trailing thing, it probably needs to happen because your guy, Patrick Mahomes, can pull a move just like the Ravens do. Get the ball with maybe 10 seconds left and go run back to the corner of the end zone and just let time expire. So this is the famous Super Bowl play. Oh, we're not trying to have an offensive play. I'll just take the safety and burn the clock. Then the Ravens pull it off a few years later against the Bengals, except they added some holding penalties to it. I think this is a flaw in the rule. Certainly interesting, but when you see an offensive team start to go backwards, there's just something that sits wrong with it for me.
Yeah, but it's just a very easy fix, which is if a team attempts this 4th-and-15 with the lead, it's a untimed down. Just like an extra point's an untimed down. That's all you got to do. It's an easy fix. Make it an untimed down if the team attempting it has the lead. But
that's good.
What I learned from your guys' previous answer is all we care about fun and interesting. So I think it should be determined by three-legged race. because who gives a damn about the integrity of the game? That would draw eyeballs. Maybe potato sack races, an offensive lineman against a kicker, a race to midfield. They could maybe put themselves in those big bubbles you roll around in and bounce off each other. Bumper cars, anybody? Because, hey, we're not worried about crowning true champions. We just want to have the most unique, wacky thing we can have. It's unbelievable, Jim.
Becky Wednesday.
No fun in you, Nick. You got no flan coursing through your veins. On to the Jets now. They recently signed Joe Flacco to be Sam Darnold's backup, but Flacco said he won't even be ready for the week one matchup against the Bills as he continues to recover from neck surgery. Nick, you surprised Flacco got a chance even though he's not healthy while Cam Newton continues to sit in free agency limbo?
No, because we've always known the rules are different for different guys. Joe Flacco's in the class of quarterbacks who can stink for six consecutive seasons, not be healthy, and still get a contract. Must be nice, Joe. I mean, hey, listen, you don't hate the player, hate the game. I'm not mad at Joe Flacco for it, but he hasn't been good since Obama's first term, and he's not healthy yet he finds himself on a roster. Good for him.
I totally agree. Brian, I saw this and I was like low-key infuriated. It's like maybe Cam should go get neck surgery. Be like, hey guys, I got neck surgery. I have no idea when I'll be able to throw a football and be back on the field. You're like, wow, sounds good. That's good news. Sign you right up.
Yeah, Cam absolutely deserves to be in the league. When you think about what Joe Flacco did last year in his 8 games as a starter, he only had one game with multiple touchdowns, only one game over 300 yards passing. He hasn't been that guy, that Joe Flacco, that Super Bowl winner in a very long time. And, of course, I think Cam certainly deserves a job. I think it also speaks to the NFL as a whole. They think that the older pocket passer is better than the injured running type of quarterback that hasn't been able to deliver as much with his arm. And I think Cam, in a way, hasn't delivered as much as some people think Joe Flacco. To me, I'm taking Cam Newton over Joe Flacco any day. He's more healthy. He's a much more valuable offensive weapon. To me, this is an obvious choice. Of course, you would go with Cam in this situation.
All right, let's talk some boxing now, where the biggest talking point of late has basically just been finding Mike Tyson an opponent for his comeback. Former heavyweight champion Deontay Wilder had a scorching take about Tyson's career resume. Take a listen to this.
If you go back, and I want somebody to answer this question for me, how many Hall of Famers fighters did Mike Tyson actually fight?
Let's see if somebody know the answer.
How many Hall of Famers did Mike Tyson actually fight? And don't bring up no Michael Spinks that came from a light heavyweight to heavyweight that was terrified out of his. And don't bring up Larry Holmes, because we already know Larry was way past his prime. So how many of them?
Wow. Nick, what do you think of what Wilder had to say?
Yeah, listen, the historical record does speak for itself. Now, I think most of us believe that even if Tyson had fought in an era where there were more dominant heavyweights, he in the 80s still would have been just as dominant as he was. But Deontay Wilder makes a fair point, to which I would say, Deontay Wilder, how about we set it up to where he fights a Hall of Famer in his prime right now? You, let's get it going. Now, that would be $100+ million for everyone involved. I say we can, you know, two birds, one stone situation. Let's get Tyson Wilder. I don't care that my friend Chris Mannix says that Tyson wouldn't have a shot. I think he would. I want to see it, Wilds.
It would be fascinating. I don't know whether to dig in on the facts of it or the fact that Deontay Wilder said it. It's probably more interesting the fact that Deontay Wilder said it. You don't really hear a lot of Tyson boxing slander from other boxers. It just feels like respect just sort of runs uphill, and that's not what we're seeing here. So, Brian, I was shocked to hear there's someone questioning Mike Tyson's legacy.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. I think it's rare that you see younger guys in their prime, especially coming off the type of loss that Deontay Wilder came off of, questioning one of the greats ever and Mike Tyson. And so I think it's a little bit weird there. To me, I always tell the young guys, listen, focus on what you're doing. Make sure that you're winning right now. And the last time we saw Deontay Wilder, he did not look very good. Mike Tyson didn't seem to be ducking a lot of people during his career, especially early on in his career. I think he fought the best people available. The heavyweight division just wasn't as strong when Mike Tyson was there.
All right. I don't know why you'd want to poke a giant, but let's get back to some football now. Check out Ravens cornerback Marlon Humphrey's latest workout. Just casually running up a gravel mountain. Obviously, my biggest issue with this is pebbles in your shoes. It's so annoying. But more importantly, Brian, you want to join me and Nick later behind my apartment for our gravel run? We got 10 runs in 30 minutes. It's timed. What do you say?
Jenna, this looks exactly like your type of workout. I can't envision myself, let alone Nick Wright, doing this workout at all. We'll be pulling Nick up that hill
right
there. This just, when I watched this workout, I started thinking and getting visions of Walter Payton running up that hill with the headband on, all those off-season workouts that he was able to do. Those were the types of workouts that inspired me as a young athlete. And so this is great by Marlon Humphrey. Anything that you can do to make sure that you're ready to play.
I did this when I was a kid, and my dad yelled at me. My dad was a contractor. Every once in a while, we had to go to a gravel yard, and I would run off the thing.
And
I did it once. I got yelled at. It was not. Yes, he was very upset with me. I did it once. I got yelled at. I didn't do it again. But it's. Yeah. I didn't know I was working out.
Listen, America.
I was goofing around.
I'm not going to be bothered by the fact that Jenna Wolf continues to try to work out shame me. That's not bothering me. What does bother me, though, in my commitment to take integrity and honesty. Is Jenna Wolf propagating to the audience this nonsense idea that there is anything in the back of her apartment other than sky rises, and $1 million-plus condos?
Lies,
the
Nick.
Idea that Jenna Wolf is living in anything other than a waterfront palatial east side estate.
Oh, we gotta take a break.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of construction work that you can just run up on. Jenna Wolf's Manhattan, a sky rise. Give me a break, America.
Hey. If you'd ever come hang out with me on the weekend, Nick, you'd see there are gravel pits and gravel mountains.
Jenna Wolf ain't running up a gravel mountain unless the gravel mountain sponsors her Instagram page.
Celtic center Enes Kanter joins us. Lots to talk to him about, including gravel mountains. Next, First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Now joined by Celtic center and friend of the show, Enes Kanter. Enes, good morning. Thanks for hanging out with us today. A happy belated birthday, we should mention.
I'm
sure you weren't able to celebrate. Getting old. I'm not, but a lot of people are. Hey, how you been staying busy the last couple weeks and months? How hard has training been knowing that the season could basically, it could be here right around the corner?
You know, just because of, we still don't know if the season is going to continue or not. We're still trying to do our best to just stay in shape. So we had actually have this virtual workouts with the Celtics. We get on the call with the strength coach, and we literally just do push-ups and sit-ups. And, you know, just I see some of the players doing workouts and with suitcases because they don't have the tools to work out. I'm like, that is going to bring us a championship. That's a championship mentality. So, like, we really literally try to do everything to stay in shape.
Love it. Oh, I love it.
Enes, they floated a lot of different potential playoff proposals. The two most likely are the regular playoffs, 1-8 in the East, 1-8 in the West. The other one is reseeding 1-16. An odd quirk of it, either way, the Celtics would be playing the Sixers in the first round, whether it was the old or the new playoff format. What are some of the strengths and weaknesses of that matchup for you guys?
I think this is, I mean, obviously our big rival is the Sixers from like the years and years. But I think it's a good matchup for us. If you look at what happened during the season, they beat us, we beat them. I think it's a really good matchup for us. And I believe my team, man, I think we can go out. I feel like we have enough guys to go out there and win a championship. I feel like we can beat every team on every floor, but we just got to go out there and just be ready, stay in shape, and just go out there and have fun.
And as games are going to have no fans, you're a guy who thrives off the enthusiasm of the crowd. I think LeBron had a quote where he was saying that he also thrives off like the visiting team to wanting to quiet them down. How are you going to motivate yourself, or how do you think the flow of the game is going to change with a silent arena?
Listen, I don't know if you're a wrestling fan, but I watch WrestleMania. And it was one of the most awkward and one of the most weirdest segments I ever watched. But I think, you know, just I feel like we all basketball players just itching to go out there and play basketball. I feel like we can just take anything right now. Only thing we got to hear is just the basketball bouncing. But I think, you know, that it's going to be fine. I'll take anything right now if you're asking me.
Well, that's interesting. So I'm curious if you've spoken to not just your teammates, but other players around the league.
Yep.
What do they want to see a playoff format look like when you come back? What do the players seem as a general consensus to be what they think would be the best option for you guys?
I mean, first, I'll tell you this. I talked to my team and they all want to go out there and play. But I'm hearing that some of the players out there in other teams that they do not want to play because they are scared. They're saying, I don't want to put my life on risk and just go out there and play a game. And I was shocked by that. I was seriously shocked by that. But I think both, if you ask my team, both ways, we're going to play against the Sixers. And we feel so confident about it. We're just going to go out there and just do what we do best and compete.
Let's assume the season does resume. I've heard very differing points of view on what types of teams or players will most benefit or most be hurt by the layoff. I've heard people say, well, the veteran team should be in better position because they have a system. They know how to keep their bodies in shape. Exactly. And some people have said the exact opposite, that the younger guys are always good to go. I've heard people say shooting never leaves you. And I've heard people say everyone's shot's going to be off. As a player yourself, what are some of the things that you think will click back into gear immediately or soon to be? And what are some things that you think are going to show the most rust?
I mean, if a player is saying that they're in game shape, they're lying. Because game shape is a different type of shape. I mean, it doesn't matter how much you run, how much you do, play, do any activities. You cannot be in game shape unless you play a game. So I think if you ask my game was always just, you know, just play physical, rebound, and play post-up game, back to basket. So I don't think I'm going to be struggled that much because, like, the Celtics was doing an amazing job keeping our focus physically and mentally right. So I feel like we're always just going to go out there and just play hard, play smart, and have fun with it.
Home court advantage, Ennis. Trying to figure out what this is like. Is it going to feel more like your home court because you're there all the time and you're living there? Or is it going to feel like an away game because it's not your home court? And how is that going to determine the flow of a series? We're so used to, hey, we'll just win our home games and we can power through. How do you think a neutral court affects the flow of a playoff series?
I think it's going to be fair because it's going to feel like it's like something like it never felt before. It's not going to feel like home court. It's not going to feel like we're on the road. So I think just because of they're going to do it in one or two location, I feel like it's fair to say the both team has the same thing, you know. But I think it's going to be very interesting because NBA or never faced anything like that before. So I feel like we just need to – I feel like whichever team gets used to the most is going to have the most benefits.
Hey, Ennis, I want to ask you a very important question here. Rob Gronkowski's resume reads like this: football – wrestling, football. You have mentioned that after the NBA, you would definitely dip your toes into the WWE.
Right.
I know you're going back into the NBA with the season starting soon, but any updates on that? You know, I know you've been watching, but what about as a career move?
Oh, you're talking about the wrestling, right? So, like, I'm already in touch with Paul Heyman. I remember last time I saw Triple H, he told me to keep my number in his phone. And so, like, it's going to be fun, man, because I feel like this is my life, you know, trolling, going out there, trash talking to people, get on people's face. So I think it's going to be fun. And I'm like, I even told Paul, like Paul said, hey, let's go out there and do it right now. I'm like, dude, you got to give me at least 4 or 5 more years to just finish my basketball career. That I am all yours. I'm all a human guy. And he was just so excited.
Well, and I can say this because Ennis and I are now close personal friends. As the video just showed, not shockingly, Ennis didn't have a lot of trouble getting the title. Had immense trouble defending the title, though, as he was pinned immediately. I think you were the shortest 24/7 champion ever. Gronk still has the 24/7 belt. Oh, what are we doing here?
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, I did say I would be your tag team partner. When both of us retire, Ennis,
hair,
I feel like it could work
what
out.
About the hair?
What about the hair?
What about the hair?
What's the wrong with the hair?
That looks so funny. Yeah, that looks so funny. I love it.
So in 5 years, you and me, tag team partner, like a big little situation?
Let's do it. Turkish Delight.
Okay, there we go. Turkish Delight. Oh, I like it.
Tag team name.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Go ahead, Wilds.
Nick, just to keep the focus on you, and as earlier in the show, we did a little predictions if it was straight seeds, and Nick has got you beating the Sixers, but losing to the Bucks. What do you need to do to get past Giannis?
Nick, I hope you still keep in that jersey that I gave it to you. I hope you didn't burn that. But
I believe that
we're gonna pass the Sixers for sure. But I'm like the Bucks is gonna be a tough matchup. But I think we have enough guys to just guard Giannis and the whole Bucks, man. Because if you look at what happened during the season, they got us, we got them. So it's gonna be a fun matchup on the Eastern Finals, I believe.
Well, I do have to mention this very quickly. Go ahead, Nick.
I was just gonna say, under the new format, I do have you beating the Clippers. So I do give you credit that if it's the new format, I have you beating the Clippers, but I think the Bucks can get Clippers, you either way. Go ahead, Jenna. I apologize.
Well, I was going to say, under our new format, Nick hasn't had a haircut in 3 months. I know that before we were making fun of his lack of hair. Now I give you carte blanche quickly with a few seconds left to make fun of the current situation on top of his head. So go ahead and use up your last couple seconds here with that because it's worth it.
And listen, I actually just cut my own hair yesterday just for this show. I wear a hat. I just didn't want Nick to get jealous, but like, you know, it's actually looking pretty good.
You know what?
Look
you know?
At that.
Innes, I'm now rooting for the Sixers. We'll see you next time.
Let's all do it.
See you later,
Wilds. Oh, everybody, we'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Innes Kanter, thank you so much.